Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, I'm Jody Peterman. We know that no one understands what you need better than you do. We take care to guide you through the legal process, ensuring that you're able to make the decisions that are best for you. If you have a personal injury, criminal, or family law issue, please take a look at our website to learn more about our practice. We offer a free initial consultation for personal injury cases. Give us a call at 229-375-5680. We have a reputation for being accessible and treating our clients well. We look forward to hearing from you.
Hello, I'm Guy Terry of Terry and Peterman. At Terry and Peterman, we are committed to representing the hardworking residents of South Georgia in personal injury, criminal, and family law matters. For years, we have worked with college students in this area to ensure legal issues do not disrupt their academic careers. We also represent military families struggling with divorce and family law issues. We rely upon over 30 years of combined experience to provide aggressive representation for our clients.
Welcome to Georgia Wrestling Now, a production brought to you by the GWH Radio Network, where we bring you the latest news and information on the local wrestling scene in and around Georgia, as well as interviews with newsmakers. And now, the GWH Radio Network presents Georgia Wrestling Now.
That's right, this is Georgia Wrestling Now. I am your host, Jonathan Williams from WrestlingWithPopCulture.com, being joined as always by Joshua Von Wheeler. Josh, I know you had some personal things happen over the past few days. I hope you're doing all right.
Yeah, I'm doing good. The last thing I want to do right now is talk about it, so let's just move on with the show.
Well, I figured that. Tonight's guest, of course, is Jimmy Rave, former Ring of Honor and TNA wrestling star. What else did I want to talk about? So over the weekend, I went to that UCW show.
How'd it do?
Down in McDonough. There, I would guess there was about 150 or so people. I heard a rumor that they started letting people in for free, but I don't know for sure if that's the case. It was in a big outdoor pavilion sort of thing, a very large place. It probably easily could have held a couple thousand or more people. I don't know. The show was good. My girlfriend had an interesting perspective that is common for anybody going to a UCW show, and that is questioning, like, why is each person wrestling another person? Because they run so infrequently, and one show rarely has the same lineup as the previous one.
Seriously.
There really is no story or
Ted Roger.
I got there a little bit late. Apparently, Wes Briscoe was in the first match, and I didn't recognize the name of the guy who wrestled, and I've forgotten it. Something Roberts, I think. I did catch Brady Pierce, who's a South Carolina guy that wrestles for Resistance Pro, I believe. Then Lodi. And I don't know his tag team partner's name, but they were called Team Fearless. Wrestled a guy who looked like the Assassin, but certainly was not the Assassin, because the Assassin was at a table, at a gimmick table of his own, as
right.
was Abdul the Butcher. But the Assassin-looking guy's tag team partner, whose name I also didn't catch, came out with a bunch of swords and stuff and, like, got in the ring and twirled him around and... It was actually more entertaining than it sounds. And Lodi still does the sign thing, and he came in. They had a motorcycle club or something sponsor the show, so there were a bunch
right.
of hot rods and motorcycles, and they came in on basically like an all-terrain golf cart thing. Then
cool.
Jimmy Rave's former tag team partner Lance Hoyt came out and basically issued a heelish open challenge that was answered by Percy Watson. And that was a good match. And then Mason Ryan and Johnny Swinger was the main event. And you've seen Johnny Swinger in person before, I'm guessing, right?
Yeah. I've worked a few shows with him and met him a few times. Yes.
He's usually one of the bigger guys.
Yeah, Mason Ryan, I'm sure, was twice his size, if not triple.
It was crazy how big this guy is. Like, I mean,
I try to tell everybody.
I felt like Gorilla Monsoon calling an Ultimate Warrior match. look at the body on this guy. But Johnny Swinger was great, and my girlfriend pointed out that he looks like Weird Al, which I'd never noticed, but he does kind of look like Weird Al.
I never noticed that either.
But that was a show. Nick Patrick refereed a bunch of the matches. I didn't see Shelly Martinez, who was advertised, but she may have been involved in the first
match. Yeah, Shelly and the Juicy Product were advertised, but I don't know if they canceled or if they were what happened. So
that was that. That's all the wrestling I attended over the weekend. But
I attended none.
I believe we have now been joined by Larry Goodman, so maybe he attended some
Yay.
Other shows.
So how much money do you think Gossett lost on that show?
Oh, God. It had to have been thousands.
$150.
It had to have been.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know how he comes up with the money to put the shows on, because the talent that he's got, even if they were wrestling for free, I'm guessing they would still want him to fly them in and put them up in a hotel for
right.
a night at least. And then the venue.
Well, I know what I had offered Mason Ryan when he first got released, and he balked at that as saying it was too low, and I said, well, that's as high as I'm going. I'm sorry. So,
yeah, I mean, you know, Lance Hoyt doesn't come cheap. Percy Watson probably doesn't come cheap.
Oh, God, no.
So,
and that's the thing. And again, you know, I'll always defer to the way the business has become is like, when Matt Hardy can't get you 1,000 people in a building, who can?
Well, they are
there is no,
already,
you know.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, it's one of the things that's like, I mean, there's not a lot of guys that are really over anymore. It's all about, and Larry, you know this, it's a story. I mean, Peach stayed through 300 plus because they had a great story. You go to watch the story.
Yeah. Yeah, I do really like the Weird Al thing with Swinger, though. That's great.
Actually, I saw something on some Facebook thing, because I've been on Facebook way too much this weekend, but somebody said that Bray Wyatt has raided Weird Al's closet, so now I'm thinking maybe I should dress Swinger up like Bray Wyatt.
I saw that, too. I forget who posted that.
Yeah, I
maybe
saw
it,
and I was like, oh, my God. It might have been. I don't know where I saw it, but it was one of the funniest things I've seen all weekend.
Well,
yeah, I mean, just going to Peach State for a second, I mean, they drew 300, and their payroll was, you know, nothing out of the ordinary.
Oh, God, yeah.
Whatsoever.
Yeah, exactly.
And they drew 300 people, you know, paying customers. There's something to be said for that.
Yep.
Absolutely.
And that's the thing is, like, I mean, I just look at it now, and, you know, I'm on a different side of it than you guys are, but it's just like, from the business standpoint, you just have to say, can I really feasibly make back what I'm guaranteeing you? And if the answer is no, then you just don't offer that guarantee. I mean, I had to learn that lesson the hard way, but, you know, that's just how it works.
The one
like,
thing that's
if you're
going to
pay Ric Flair, oh, go ahead, sorry, Larry.
No, I'm just saying Gossett's saving grace, and I hope it was the case on this show, has been his ability to get money from sponsors. So I hoped that he had that.
There were plenty of sponsors. There was Aaron's Rent to Own. Like I said, I believe it was Cycle Nation was the motorcycle group because they're handing out flyers for the next show will be Thursday, July 24th, and it'll be at Cycle Nation in McDonough, and it's free with a school supply donation. So again, I guess the Cycle Nation is paying for the show.
Right, that's what it sounds like.
Yeah.
And they have advertised Johnny Swinger, Mason Ryan, Barbarian, Sean Tempers. But they also had it set up where it was like a festival. There was three or four food vendors, and, of course, they had T-shirts and stuff and all that. But, so I'm guessing those vendors probably had to pay for their tables or their booths or whatever. And,
right.
I have no idea if he lost money or what, but they've got a July show scheduled, and he told me that there's already an August show scheduled as well. So we'll see.
Yeah, and if he's got his sponsorships in place, you know, he might be okay. I mean, that's what he can do. That's what he does well.
He does do that well, that's one of the things that, like, I have always kind of been jealous of him. Is even when, you know, you go back to that one show I was at in Anderson. It's like, I mean, he had Budweiser, he had Hooters, had like three or four other local things. He had a radio station. It's like, I mean, he definitely can sell the corporations on his wrestling show. Sadly, he can't sell the fans on his shows.
No, so he gets the money from the sponsors, and then what happens with the money from the sponsors? Well.
Yeah. Well, it's a write-off of the sponsors. I mean, it's marketing for them, so they don't care business. But, Larry, I'm glad you called, because I'm going to let you lead most of the Jimmy Rave interview tonight.
Oh, really?
Well, speaking of Peach State, Jimmy Rave was part of that show on Saturday, I believe, and now he's part of our show, so I'm going to bring him online. How you doing tonight, Jimmy?
What's up, guys? How are you? What's going on?
All right. You're on with me, Larry Goodman, and Josh Wheeler.
Good company.
So, Larry, were you at the Peach State show, Larry?
I absolutely was, yes.
I obviously was not there because I was at the UCW show we were just talking about. But, so Jimmy Rave wrestled Stitch, is that right?
That is correct. I was curious, Jimmy, what your thoughts were on Stitch as a wrestler and about his development at this stage.
I think he's, another untapped potential in Georgia. I think he's got a lot of, like, just really natural athletic ability. It's one of those things where you go back to when guys start working other people outside of their usual comfort zone or whatever, that, you know, like, you get to challenge them a little bit. And so I was happy that he was up for the challenge, and I thought we did well in the spot that we were given.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly agree. I mean, I thought, you know, as I wrote, I mean, I thought that was the kind of match that helped him and just raised his stature in the eyes of the fans there in a losing effort. So, I mean, you can't beat that.
Yeah, and, you know, like, I talk about this a lot, like, where, you know, I'm more in a development mode for other people. And so, you know, when I get into a match like that, and then somebody that I, you know, think can benefit from having a kind of match like that, then, like, I try to base a lot of this stuff on, you know, furthering them, you know, because, you know, like, one of the things that I've always thought is, like, if you can do that with all of your matches and like, not lose your heat afterwards, then it's a win-win for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Jimmy, I'm curious. You haven't been as active in the local wrestling scene over the past few months or so. Did you just need to take some time away from the ring, or what's been the reason for that, and what brought you back over the past couple weeks or so?
I stopped wrestling for about 10 months, and, you know, it was just time for a little bit of a break after, you know, wrestling for like 14 years and not having a real break besides injuries. You know, it just kind of takes a toll on you physically and mentally, and so it was nice to just kind of step back and, you know, focus on family and stuff that I do outside of the ring. And so, but then I just, you know, needed wrestling in my life. It's something I'm passionate about, and it's a good release for me, and I really enjoy it, you know, like, the development aspect of pro wrestling. And so I've started doing things here and there, and and just things started falling in place. I just booked a trip to Canada for October, and so, like, things just were starting to fall back in place. And it's just a weird thing about wrestling is, you know, like, I didn't really come back to try to carry on a full workload, but it looks like it might be that way coming up soon.
So, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Josh.
Nope. Go ahead. You.
All right. Well, I think did you make your return locally at Peach State in that match? I saw pictures of you and Kyle Matthews.
Yeah. Originally, I came back, 3 or 4 months ago, and Peach State did a cruiserweight, six-person type scramble thing. And
yeah.
So I came back in that, and, I wrestled it in 10 months, and I get there, and they're like, oh, yeah, you got 30 minutes. And I was just like, why do you hate me? And I came down to Kyle and I, but, Stitch was in that match, and Kevin Blue and the Young Lions, they were both in that. Can't remember who the other one was. It just kind of re-energized me, especially, walking in the back and some of the other guys were just laying on the floor gasping for air, and I just kind of walked back there, and I was like, man, I feel old, but I guess I'm not that bad off.
Well, I was going to ask you, like you said, you're kind of more than helping the guys develop and working at Peach State. It's a very young roster. It's kind of similar to what you were kind of doing with PCW a few years ago. Who are some of the young guys that you're really saying, okay, this guy, he might be that next guy. He might be a guy that someone should look into and really get behind. Who are some of those guys that you're working with that you really, really are just outstanding? Just finding outstanding and really kind of blown away by.
Yeah, I mean, I've always been, the number one supporter of Kyle Matthews, I think anybody else that's watched him wrestle is a supporter of him. But, Stitch was somebody that I really took a liking to that first night, just think that, given the right opportunities, he could do some really, amazing things. Fred Yehi is another guy that I really am high on, and I think he's got a lot of potential that just really untapped. That's all I've got to tangle it up with. I like Kevin Blue. I think that, we had a really, really good match and Peach State a few months ago, and I think he's got a lot of potential, and he just, it's one of those things where, that was the exciting part for, getting to travel around the world was get to wrestle guys that really, took you to another level. And so, I'm a little bit different when I approach these situations where I don't take nights off or anything like that. I believe in giving people, their money's worth every night. And so when I can do that and then, help guys understand the development of a match and the development of, the characters, I think that it just is really helpful and it brings guys to the next level. But I mean, those three guys are, excluding Kyle, are three guys that I really think that, once given the ball, that they can probably score with.
That's interesting because your match with Stitch, it was the pacing of a match and building of a match that where you could see where you really helped help that along with him, and hopefully he took something away from that.
Yeah, it's interesting. For a long time, I would sit down in a locker room and guys would just want me to lay things out for them or I might be wrestling somebody and they. Back in the early days, we'd just be like, all right, this is what we'll do, And, I really approach situations a lot differently than I used to and really try to explain to guys, the method of my madness. That's what I am hoping that they take away from it is, there's always situations where, there was a match at Peach State a few months ago that was really, really great, and I'm not going to call it names or anything, but it was two guys that are, exceptional talents, but they went in there and tried to wrestle just a straight match and not interact with the fans. and technically it was an amazing match, you know. And I totally got where they were coming from, you know. But I, you know, when they came back, you know, I just said, hey, you know, like, what'd you think of the match? And they said, you know, I thought it was good. And they said, you know, I just wish the crowd was with it a little bit more, you know. And I really learned, like, I can go out there and do what I want to do as far as, like, wrestling whatever style I need to wrestle. But I really have to bait the crowd in the beginning, you know. Like, once I give them a little bit of gaga in the beginning, I can just do whatever I want after that, you know. And until guys understand that, I totally get, you know, going in there and trying to have this, you know, excellent quality technical match, because I've done those, you know. And but like, I, you can't do that, you know, in the crowd that we're wrestling in front of, you know what I mean?
Well, like Cypher, I mean, he's a great flyer, but if there's no context to why and when he's flying it, you know, it just becomes another move.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, and like, you know, we had that problem with Jack Evans in Ring of Honor, and especially when we first started doing stuff for Dragon Gate in Japan, like, Jack would hit like two dives a match, you know, and it was just like, you know, Jack, you do all this amazing stuff, you know, like, if you just spread that stuff out a little bit, you know, you always keep fans guessing, and you know, you don't always have to hit it, you know what I mean, and so. Like, when guys start understanding the, you know, like, making the people want something, I think it just brings it to a whole nother level. And, you know, like, I've always said, like, I never got bookings based on, you know, like, my work rate or, you know, like, that I was a bodybuilder or anything like that. Like, I just really understood the psychology part of it and really understood the mechanics of pro wrestling. And, you know, I was in a locker room the other day, and this young guy was wearing his iPod, and it really irritated me, because he was wearing it like while the promoter was trying to do like a pre-show meeting. And I was just like, oh man, like. And, like, the old Jimmy Rave would have just said something and just called him out, you know what I mean? But I just pulled him to the side. I said, hey, man, like, how long have you been wrestling? He was like, 10 years, which sounds shocking, because I've been around for a minute and I'd never heard of him. And I said, hey, man, like, you don't learn anything when you have your iPod on in the locker room. And he looked at me like I was an idiot, you know what I mean? I said, like, look, you know, like, I mean, and the same thing with, like, when you're riding in the car with other pro wrestlers, like, I just don't think it's a good thing to do, because, you know, like, you know, those of us that, you know, have been wrestling for a while, like, that's, you know, like, I learned more from just hearing other guys, you know, bullshit in the locker room than stuff that I've learned in the ring.
You know,
well,
one thing that – go ahead, sorry.
No, you go ahead.
Well, I'm just thinking about the – just one more thing about the match with Cypher was the size difference, and I thought back to the Jimmy Rave I saw coming into Wildside in whatever that was, 2000, 2001, and, you know, like, you weren't a big guy at the time at all, and, like you look like a big guy with a Stitch Cypher or a Kyle Matthews, and that size thing that these – some of these really talented guys, but they're just so small.
Yeah, Baron's always makes a comment that, like, I'm, like, deceptionally bigger than most people think.
Yeah.
And so, like, and it is different. And, like, you know, but, like, I don't know if, like, over the years, like, you know, from starting out at Wildside, you know, like, I was 160 when I started, and like, I used to try, you know, it was a great place to learn, you know, and I tried a lot of stuff, and I learned over the years, like, if you watch my matches now, I don't do any moves where I pick guys up off the ground. And, like, I tried telling somebody that the other day, and they were like, that's, you know, bullshit, I know you do, and I was like, I mean, you can watch my matches, I don't, you know, because I want to be able to do what I do to everybody, you know, and I really... the way that I figured it out was I wrestled Samoa Joe one night at Ring of Honor. I was like, I can't do anything to him because I pick people up too much, you know? And so, like, I just started thinking about, you know, and I guess I'm just, you know, meticulous about details like that, you know, where I'm just, I really, maybe I overthink things too much, but, you know, and then, like, I mean, I still have guys, you know, talk, you know, comment, you know, and I mean, there's a couple guys that said it at the Peach State stuff, man, like, oh, man, you do all that flying around. I couldn't do it, you know? I was like, what did I do? You know what I mean? Like, I was a catcher. You know, I played center field all night. You know what I mean? Like, that's easy. It's about that perception, and you know, like I lay things out to where it looks like I'm doing a lot more than I am, and so, you know, you know, and that's part of, you know, what I talk to guys about it. Like, hey, man, like, you want to establish things that you're going to be able to do with anybody. You want to establish things that, you know, like, you're going to be able to sustain for years to come, you know what I mean? And, like, you know, once, you know, the flips and all that stuff are gone, then, you know, then what do you have left, you know what I mean? And, like, that's where the character development and learning how to interact with the crowd and all that stuff really comes in handy.
Yeah, well, I mean, I will just, this is switching away a little bit, but you make me think of Adam Jacobs, who doesn't wrestle near the daredevil style that he used to, but his
mm-hmm.
ability to interact with the crowd and connect with people and just make everything count is just so far advanced from where he was when he did all the daredevil stuff.
Yeah, right, yeah. Yeah, somebody was, I did a podcast last night, and they were asking me about guys that, you know, should have had a break in wrestling, and he was one of the guys that I really thought about. You know, like, had he not taken time off, you know, he's just an amazing talent.
Yeah.
Okay. And he was back in 2001. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, it's, you know, like, there was a whole bunch of guys like him, Jason Cross. You know, just a crop of guys that, you know, had stuck with it for a minute longer. You know, got one more person to look at him for a second, and then things could have been totally different.
You're talking about giving guys advice and, or, you know, critiquing when they come to the back, and I know you had a brief stint agenting at Anarchy. Could you just talk about that a little bit, what that was like to be in that role up back in Cornelia doing that?
I really enjoyed it. You know, like, you know, had it not been like a 2-hour drive and all that stuff, it would have been a lot different for me. But, you know, like, I mean, like, it was really humbling for you know, somebody like Stephen Walters, like, to come up or text me before the show and was like, will you agent my match, you know what I mean? And, you know, like, those things are really humbling. You know, like, I was like, dude, you just got signed to WWE, like, you know, what do you need me to tell you anything for, you know what I mean? And those things are, you know, like, I give the time of day to the guys that are like that, you know, and like, there, you know, there's some guys that just, you know, don't want to hear it. And I really learned over the years. I used to just get so fired up, like, just about how people treated pro wrestling. And, like, now I'm a lot more mature and calmed down about it, you know. And, like, the guys that I feel like don't really give a damn, like, I just, you know, I'm cordial with them, and then I go about my business. But the ones that I see are passionate, and, like, I sit down and have a conversation with them. And so, like, being up there was just, I mean, like, there's so much talent there, like, you know, I mean, like, there wasn't much more I could add to, like, a Sean Tippers versus Stephen Walters match, you know what I mean? But the fact that they were asking me some stuff was just really fun, you know? And then the three of us getting to sit down and talk about, you know, some, you know, placement stuff and all that, and that's all it really was placement stuff, and then, you know, like, selling things, you know what I mean, like, and knowing where cameras are and ring positioning and stuff like that, like, that's just one of those things where, you know, if you wrestle, you know, a whole bunch of times a year, then you just start learning that, you know what I mean, and so, I that's something that I even, you know, talk to guys about now is, like, you know, I'm very meticulous about, you know, how people sell and where they position things. And so, you know, it was a really good experience. And but when I started wanting to dabble again inside the ring, then it just kind of, I kind of had to go where my heart was at the time.
Cool.
Going back, kind of, you were talking about, like, paying attention to the details and really, like, thinking about every little thing you do. When you went to Ring of Honor, you were notoriously one of the only guys who really had any heat there for a while. And I've always wondered, like, when you were getting over huge up there, AJ was getting over huge over there, CM Punk was getting over huge, and you guys weren't really doing a lot of that Northeast style, but you guys are the ones getting the heat and getting the attention. So how come the Southern style of wrestling, where it's more psychology-based and less cool moves-based, how come that's not getting over more on the independent level?
You know, like, that's a great question. I mean, like, and, like, a lot of people know a lot of my body of work from Ring of Honor. And, like, it was, I would dumb down wrestling a lot of the times. And, like, I really carried myself in a different manner. Like when I as soon as I got into the car, I was Jimmy Rave, and I was, you know, I was about business, you know. Kyle Matthews tells a great story about the first time he ever saw me wrestle live. It was at a Ring of Honor show, and they were standing up in front of the auditorium we had in Dayton, and in that building, all the boys would go come into the back door, and I don't remember this, so I'm just going off of what Kyle says. But apparently, I saw the line of fans standing out before the show, and I had whoever was driving drop me off in front of all the fans, and then I walked by them all, and the guy opened up the front door to let me in, and then he tried walking behind me, and I slammed the door in his face. And I didn't have to do that. You know what I mean? Like, I could have just drove to the back and, you know, and came in like everybody else. You know what I mean? But,
right.
I just really got a kick out of all these people thought they were so smart, you know. And then, like, I remember, you guys know Green Lantern fan? Have you ever seen him at shows? He always has a Green Lantern shirt on.
Oh, yeah. On the old Ring of Honor DVDs.
Yeah. We were wrestling in Manhattan, and CM Punk and I just had the dog collar match that we did, and you know, I thought it was a really good match and everything. And, like, I remember walking out of the building that night, and Green Lantern fan was like, "Yo, man, that was a great match." I said, "No shit," you know, and I just walked off, and he was like, "You're a fucking dick," you know what I mean? And, like, but, you know, like that, you know, everybody else was just like, "Oh, yeah, thanks, man. Hey, you know, thanks," you know.
Right.
And I was just like, I enjoy the genuine heat, you know.
And, yeah,
you know,
go ahead.
The toilet paper thing, you know, like, was just based on me reacting to some guy that was trying to be a smartass, you know, and then people thought I genuinely hated getting toilet paper thrown at me, and, like, I was just like, man, this is easy money, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I wish I would have kept a lot of that toilet paper, but I wouldn't fit it on my bag.
But that's the thing is, like, and I'm sure you here in the locker room, and we've talked about this podcast, that everything is kayfabe shit. And I think I'm, like, one of the only people that's like, no, it's not. It's just you have to realize that you're still got to work. You just got to work a little bit harder or work differently, and maybe I'm wrong about that, but I think that, like you just said, you were able to get heat by just, you know, just doing what you thought was just that small thing. And that's where I think guys are losing it now, is because they're either afraid to get heat or they don't believe they get heat.
Yeah, you know, and like, in this day and age with social media and everything, and, like, you know, people just really forget what they, you know, like, I'm very meticulous about what I put on Twitter or Facebook or any of that stuff, you know what I mean? Like, even though, you know, like, you know, I'm not, you know, working big angles and stuff like that, you know, like, I, you know, Jim Cornette used to say, you know, they can know the business and they don't have to know your business, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
And so when I can cast a little bit of shadow of doubt, you know, like, I wrestle for Pro South in Piedmont, Alabama, so. And this go around, I'm a babyface there, but when I lived there for a year and a half, and I never ate in Piedmont, Alabama. I never shopped in Piedmont, Alabama. I came into town, I wrestled, and I got out of there. And, like, so people never got an opportunity to interact with me. And, like, now that I'm a babyface and, like, you know, they'll call me down to do, like, an autograph signing or something, there's a line of people, you know what I mean? And that, you know, it's just, you know, a different, you know, style of thinking, you know, whereas some of the guys that live in town, like, you know, whether they're a heel or a babyface, they're out there interacting with the fans, and you know they're very accessible and all that stuff. And I'm just like, why pay, you know, X amount of dollars to come see your homeboy wrestle? You know what I mean?
Right.
It's a different mindset, you know. Like I really believe that people, you know, that are passionate about wrestling really embrace.
Well, Jimmy, you've talked a lot about working with younger guys and kind of teaching them the stuff you've learned in your career and mentoring them a little bit. But this Sunday at the debut Atlanta Wrestling Entertainment event, you're working with a bunch of guys who don't need that at all, guys that you've worked with many other times. You're tagging with Chip Day again to reform Jimmy Rave Approved, and you're working with Murder One and Corey Chavis. Tell us a little bit about what you're anticipating with that match and the show overall.
Well, I mean, you're implying that old dogs can't learn new tricks, and I really believe that, like, everybody in that match can learn a thing or two from what I've done.
I agree.
You know, definitely in a situation like this, like, you know, like it's. You know, like I'm excited about it because it's, you know, four guys that, like, all have had close interactions with each other. I mean, like, when I was coming up, I mean, Chip Day used to come to the shows when he was like 11 years old. You know what I mean? Like, when I first started wrestling, and you know, and then Corey and I trained under Murder One together, and you know, and then we all kind of went off, did our own things, and like now we're coming back together, and I think it's going to be a one-upsmanship with four guys that, you know, really wanted to show everybody why, you know, they're one of the best wrestlers in Georgia, you know? And, you know, and, like, when you get four guys in that kind of situation, then, like, it's just, you know, it's balls to the wall at that point. And, you know, everybody wins in that situation, the fans, you know, my team.
So going back a little bit, and, you know, we're talking about your trainer and, you know, kind of how you were brought up. So we kind of go over exactly because, you know, he sort of has trained me as well. So kind of go through, like, what he did to you to train you and how Murder One really stuck that psychology part of the business inside your brain.
Yeah, I mean, like, it was, you know, it was definitely, like, a mindset thing, you know what I mean? Like, where, you know, just being in the car with him and, you know, riding the shows and working out before shows, and, you know, and then, you know, a lot of the times it would be, you know, a lot of my first matches were Murder One and Corey Chavis versus me and X, whoever the other guy was, you know? And so, like, you know, just a lot of those learning experiences were just, you know, school of hard knocks where, like, you know, I just really learned on the job. And it was one of those things where, like, you know, that's why I'm really passionate about, like, you know, guys, you know, paying attention while they're in the locker room. You know, like, another thing that really irritates me about wrestling right now, and this might be a completely, total different tangent, like, that you wanted, but, like, I remember going to Wildside back in the day, and none of us would leave the show until after the main event, you know what I mean? And, like, every show I go to now, like, by the time the main event's out there, it's a ghost town, you know what I mean?
Right.
And it's just like, what are you guys learning from this experience? You know what I mean? And, you know, like, when you're talking about guys like, you know, AJ and Punk and, you know, Christopher Daniels is another one, and Brian Danielson or Daniel Bryan, like, those guys would sit back and watch, you know, from start to finish, you know what I mean? And I think that's how they learn what to do and what not to do, you know? And, you know, and so, and I believe about, you know, people, you know, one of the things that Murder One, like, also taught me was, like, being different, you know, and giving people something different than what other, that they've already seen throughout the show, you know what I mean? And, like,
right.
you can't figure that out unless you're watching, you know? And so it's just, you know, it's a very different landscape these days, but I always thought, like, you learn from everybody, like, whether it's good stuff or bad stuff. You know, I learn a lot from guys of the absolute shits, you know? Like, I learn what not to do, you know?
Jonathan, do you have another question?
Sure. I just want to get back to the AWE event, of course. Like I said before, you talked about mentoring a lot of younger guys, and there are a lot of younger guys on that card. Is there anybody in particular that has stood out for you that might be wrestling there that you might be wanting to give some advice to or working with or something like that?
Well, you know, like I did have the privilege of working with Drew Adler for a couple of years at Rampage, and, you know, I'm really excited to see him versus Davey Richards. I think that's just going to be an amazing opportunity for him. Davey was one of the, I was one of the first guy to get programmed with him at Ring of Honor. It was his first match there, and so, like, you know, just to see his progression in pro wrestling has been awesome, and, like, and he's just, you know, one of the most talented people in between those ropes that you'll ever find. But I think a lot of people, Drew's another one of those guys that we were talking about earlier that, like, and if the right people, you know, started paying attention, you know, things could be endless opportunities for him. Bobby Moore is another one that, you know, he's, you know, I know he's, everybody sings those praises. I gotta give my stamp of approval on him because he was, especially, you know, during the Rampage stuff, he was a go-to guy, man. Like, if I needed a good match out of somebody, you know, I'd put him in there with somebody like Bobby and it would get done. And so, I mean, like, you know, like, I'm excited about the show because there's so many guys that, you know, are hungry and that are looking, you know, to make an impact in pro wrestling. And, like, you know, when you get them all together, then that's the thing that fosters exciting landscapes of pro wrestling. When I first started at Ring of Honor, man, like, it was just a whole bunch of guys that were real hungry for pro wrestling. Like, before the show, everybody was in the ring rolling around with each other. Like, you had a fight to get in the ring, you know what I mean? And, like, when I went back last year, it just wasn't like that anymore, you know what I mean? It became about a, you know, television spot and, you know, money and all that stuff. And so it's just, you know, right now it's, you know, you have a good landscape for having, you know, a whole bunch of hungry guys that are, like, trying to reach this another level. And then when that happens, they bring a promotion along with it. And I think that's an exciting thing to have.
Larry, do you have anything?
Yeah, completely different direction. I was very curious about your thoughts on Ring Ta-King, and it seems to me that TNA, like, missed a great opportunity there. And what do you think of that whole project?
I mean, I loved it, man. I thought it was amazing. I also loved working with Jeff and Dutch Mantel. You know what I mean? Like, when you have two guys like that, you know, to learn from, like, it just, you know, it's just a whole nother level. But yeah, man, like, I think it was just did you get to watch any of it, Larry?
A little bit, a few episodes.
Yeah, like, did you get to see any of the Scott Steiner stuff where he, like,
was
just jumping in the crowd? Yeah, like, people were just going nuts, you know, like, and it was just, you know, raw, nobody told us about this, but, like, when we flew in that first night, Scotty lives in Atlanta, and we got to the baggage claim, and there's, like, you know, cameras everywhere, and Scott Steiner is, like, one of those guys that, like, transcends every, you know, demographic you can ever think of. And, like, because he looks like a freak, you know what I mean? And it was, like, and then as soon as, like, those cameras came on, like, he turned into Scott Steiner, and it was amazing. And, like, just watching, like, you know, just people on the streets just, like, run from him, you know, it was awful. And so, like, Sanjay Dutt is, like, one of my close personal friends, and, like, and so having him there and really, you know, helping us with the culture and, you know, they had guys that were, that had only been trained for, like, 50 days, you know what I mean? And, put, you know, like, I was, like, one of the guys, the first match ever was on TV, you know, and we had to go, like, 10 minutes, you know what I mean? And, like, if you watch the match, like, I'm, like, when we were talking about creating a lot of movement, like, I'm running everywhere trying to make it look like this guy knows what he's doing, you know what I mean? And, like, but, I mean, like, for those guys, like, it was a huge deal. I mean, like, the first episode had, like, I can't, like, 19 million people watch it, you know what I mean? It was an insane number. But, like, for
so
India,
what,
it was...
So what happened? Was, I mean, why did it not take, you know, take? I mean, was that TNA's problem? Was it a problem with Colors? What happened?
I think it was Colors. Because as soon as, you know, like, I think Intermall was really, really behind it. Intermall was the production company that did it. And they do stuff like Big Brother, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, those kind of shows, you know. And what they do is, like, they develop it in an area, and then they distribute it to other countries, you know. Like, so you have, like, Big Brother UK and Big Brother America, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what Intermall wanted to do with pro wrestling is, like, you know, the next thing I think we were supposed to do was, like, I know they wanted to do one in Germany, or, like, that there was rumblings about Germany and Brazil and all these different things, you know, where we would go, you know, as, you know, employees of TNA, like, we would come in and get guys ready and, like, you know, have that core group of guys around. But I meant, like, you know, they, you know, like, so, like, Nick Dinsmore and Savio Vega stayed over there for, like, I think 8 weeks training these guys, you know, trying to get them ready. And then, like, when we got over there, myself and Nunzio would work with them on bumping and towing and stuff like that. And so, like, it was just a really cool experience. You know, like, it was one of those things where I got to help out guys, you know, like we were talking about before. And, you know, and I thought they really had something that was different, you know. And I think it was Colors, because as soon as we left, they started doing a similar thing with mixed martial arts, and it fell flat though, and it got canceled after like half a season. But
well,
I mean, like, you know, I think it was a Jeff Jarrett brainchild, you know what I mean? And, like, so, you know, he came back and I think was working on other stuff, and, you know, and then whatever happened with him and Impact, you know, happened, and so I think everything just kind of fell by the wayside. Because,
well,
I mean, you know, Jeff's the one that has all the connections, you know. He's still involved with AAA, you know. I think he was the one that probably hooked up the thing with Muda, you know what I mean? Like, you know, those are all his relationships, not anybody else's.
Right. Speaking of TNA, since, you know, we're kind of in that area now, how chaotic was it when you were there? And, you know, you got a feel for what's going on with them now. I mean, seeing some of these pictures of their house shows is kind of sad. But, you know, was it chaotic when you were there? And is there any hope for them? Or is the brand officially, like, on its last leg?
Man, like, I can't say too much about, like, what goes on, like, on TV, because, you know, I just don't have an opportunity to get to watch it.
Right.
Lucky
but,
you.
You know, sitting back and knowing that they let AJ Styles slip through their fingers, Daniels and Kazarian, whether they just willingly let them walk away, or Chris Sabin, you know what I mean?
Right.
You know, like, those guys are irreplaceable, you know what I mean? I, like, and I'm not somebody that says, you know, like I used to say when I was doing creative stuff at Rampage, like everybody's replaceable, but Christopher Daniels is irreplaceable. You know what I mean? Like no matter where he's at or what kind of role he's in, you know what I mean? And, you know, so just, you know, just seeing that is, you know, heartbreaking. And then going and reading the attendance figures for their house shows is just like, you know, it's just like a, you know, get punched in the gut. You know what I mean? Like, because just as somebody that cares about pro wrestling and cares about my friends in pro wrestling, like I want there to be another opportunity for guys to be able to go and make money. You know what I mean? And I was really fortunate when I was there that like I was on 80% of the house shows and we were doing, you know, I just was looking at my old travel documents from 2008 and like, you know, there was like a 3-month period where I was only home for like 7 days, you know? And so we were just doing house show after house show after house show. And like, it was, you know, 1,000 or more a show, but like, I really felt a, you know, something was going wrong when we did a house show in Ontario when I first got there, like December 2007. And then we went back into the pay-per-view there and it drew less than the house show did.
Wow.
And I was just like, wow, this is nuts, you know? But, you know, it's a scaled back operation, you know, and at one point the house show business was the only money making thing in the company, you know? And I don't know where, you know, all that, you know, what happened to it, you know, but I mean like I enjoyed my time there, you know what I mean? Like, you know, besides having personal issues that I was going through myself, the only difficult thing about it was I did more wrestling before the show than I did on the show, you know what I mean? And so
right.
I just had this unfulfilled thing all the time, you know what I mean? Where I was just like, man, I got into pro wrestling to wrestle, you know what I mean? And like, and I was coming straight from, you know, Ring of Honor and Japan to, you know, where I was doing like 20 or 30 minute matches a night, you know what I mean? To, all right, you got 5 minutes with entrances, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
It's just like, oh my God, this is what I got into wrestling for. I mean, like I was making more money than I had ever made, but you know, it just became one of those things where it was just like, you know, you just feel unfulfilled, you know, like as somebody that really likes wrestling, you know? And so, I mean, like a lot of the stuff, you know, I learned more, you know, wrestling with the Guns and P. Williams and Xavier Woods and Jay Lethal and Sanjay before the show. I mean, because, you know, we all rode together and roomed together. And so, you know, we just would, you know, really look out for each other. It was one of those catch 22 things, you know, like here I am not getting to wrestle the way that I would like to, but I'm also getting to wrestle, like I got to wrestle Booker T and like I did some stuff with Kurt, you know what I mean? And like, you know, like, or, and I got to wrestle Christian a few times, you know what I mean? And like, those things were just amazing, you know? And, you know, Christian was somebody that really took me under his wing when I first got there and was like, do this, this, and this. And when I first got there, man, like, you know, Jeff was a supporter of mine and Russo was a supporter of mine. Other than that, like, you know, I don't think any of the agents liked me. I know Dutch was just like, I don't see what the big deal with him is and all this stuff. And so when I started getting on house shows that Dutch was, you know, the agent for, and he would see what I would do on a house show where it wasn't, you know, where I was there for 5 minutes where we actually get 15 minutes to wrestle. And he was just like, oh, okay. You know, like, you know, he would start, you know, coming up to me and, you know, saying, oh man, I really like the stuff, you know, try this, this, and this. And then like, you know, just forming a relationship with him. And like, we used to do matches with the Machine Guns where we would do 15 minutes and never take a back bump.
Wow.
And like, we got to the curtain one night and Dutch was like, fuck, man, you guys are going to kill yourselves before you're my age, you know, man? Like, you guys got to stop bumping so much, you know? I said, Dutch, you can watch it tomorrow night. We don't take any back bumps. And he's like, bullshit. you know. And then the next night, I was right before the match, I egged him. I said, "Hey, watch this butt dust. Tell me how many back bumps we take, you know." And we get to back. He goes, "Holy shit, your guy's a genius. You know, I could have used you in Memphis." You know what I mean? We just created a lot of movement and, you know, did some loops and stuff. And, you know what I mean? There was definitely positive things about it, but, it was just one of those things where, if you wanted to go there and have the, matches that you were having in Ring of Honor, it's not the greatest place, you know what I mean? I mean, you have to go there and market yourself as somebody that, I use it as a commercial for me, you know what I mean? And it was a great opportunity to get to play a different kind of character too, you know what I mean? And so, I just used it like anything else. You know, I just took what I could and made the most out of it. But like right now, you know, it's scary, man. To read the attendance stuff, where 200 or 300 people, and you have, this amazing roster of talent, and that's all you're getting, you know.
That's the thing. These are really talented people, and there's no audience for them.
Yeah, I mean, when you have a roster with Gunner and the Wolves and James Storm, yeah. It's depressing, man. You know, Zima Ion, he's a good buddy of mine. It's super depressing when you look at that roster and know that there is a whole bunch of talent. You know what I mean? And if you take them off a leash, that they could just do all this amazing stuff. But I don't know what to pinpoint it on. You know what I mean? There's been a lot of turnover since I was there too. Craig Jenkins isn't doing the live events anymore, and he was a huge reason why I think they were successful, and that kind of stuff is bothersome. I mean, you can get around the television product, you know what I mean? You're gonna have that stuff in WWE or wherever you go, where it's stuff that makes you scratch your head, But as far as the live event, you can't cheat people on that.
Yeah, you're talking about doing 5-minute matches for TV, and of course, when you were at Rampage, you guys, you were booking for TV as well, and you've always been around Wildfire with TV. Do you really feel the idea of the 15-20-minute TV match is gone? Is that era really past us, or is it just that these people that really don't understand the wrestling business just say it's past us?
I would do a 15-20-minute match. We've done a couple where, one match was the whole episode,
We did one match,
You know what I mean? And I believe in those things. And I believe that, people are going to come and tune in to something that says pro wrestling to see what they get, you know what I mean? And if they turn it in and you give them 5 minutes, then that's what they're going to expect. But when you give them something different, and it becomes more of a contest and more of a, it's difficult to tell a real dramatic story in pro wrestling in 5 to 10 minutes, you know what I mean? And have people invested in it. And so, I just felt like, you tell people what they can buy into and what they don't, you know what I mean? And so if that's what you put on TV, then that's what you get, that's what they expect and that's what you give them. But if WWE's, turn it around and said, "Hey man, we're going to have, every match go, 8 to 15 minutes, and then our main event will do 20 to 30, then,
right.
People would, I think, you train the audience to do what you want them to do,
Well, yeah, you got a vicious cycle going where you have the fans are given shorter matches, and so they have a short attention span, and then they don't have attention span if you try to give them a longer one, so they're being trained to only have a short attention span and not have the patience for a longer match.
Yeah, and the pro wrestlers are also trained to only work that style, and so they don't as soon as you get them past that 10-minute mark, they're lost. They can't get people invested in it, you know? And, you know, like, that's, you know, like, I remember having conversations with guys, you know, back in the day where, you know, ideally, like a development system, like, I mean, like, you know, if I was, you know, Vince McMahon or whatever, you know, ideally a developmental system would, include sending guys out to work different territories. You know, like they would go in, you know, you can send them for Brian Dixon in England for 3 months, you know what I mean, and let them, you know, learn how to work in front of that crowd. You would send them to Mexico for 3 months, let them work there, in Puerto Rico, you know what I mean? And, like, that's how you teach them how to be performers instead of sticking them in a training facility doing 500 bumps a day. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But that's just my vision, you know, but, like, it just teaches people to do something different, you know?
Yeah. Well, and I think people forget also, like, I mean, you know, we're all three, Larry, you're a little older, I'll go and admit it, but the three of us and Jonathan too, you know, we grew up with squash matches, and a squash match, you know, it was to build a guy up, but you see, but that's the way that TD was done, when you would get six squash matches and then, like, one or two killer main events.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, it happened with the Attitude Era, but then now TV's all way, like, oh, we got to put all of our main event guys in, you know, in as many matches as possible. And really, to me, I feel like no one's getting over because everybody just kind of catch 22. It's like, oh, well, he won this week. He's going to lose next week.
Yep. And, you know, like, and I put that back on the performer, too. I mean, like, I probably only won 3 matches and 2.5 years that I was at TNA, you know what I mean?
Right.
But people don't remember that. They just remember the gimmick and, you know, the fact that, you know, we were on the show, you know? And, I remember, you know, like, my best friend, Sal Renaro, and, you know, I used to give him so much shit about this. Like here I am, you know, a contracted employee of the company, and Sal Renaro comes in and does a 3-minute match with Matt Morgan, right? And I was like, what the fuck is going on? Like, the week before, I got beat in 30 seconds, you know? And I was just like, and then Lance got beat in a minute and a half right after that, you know? And I was just like, you know, and like, is, you know, people will make comments about, like, that I was a job guy, you know? But, you know, like, you know, like I got paid and, you know, I was, you know, like, and sometimes I'll say, like, who do you remember me going under to, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
exactly.
I think that's a performer thing, man. Like, because, you know, I just think that, like, guys don't understand how to, you know, walk into a situation like that and make the most out of it, you know, and say, okay, like, I have 5 minutes to make people only remember that I was here, you know? And they're not trained to do that.
Well, I always,
to, you know, it's
yeah,
ABC,
go ahead,
you know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
well,
it's paid by numbers.
Yeah. And you know, I and Larry, you can throw this in there, too, and I'm sure Jimmy knows this, too. We'll never forget the gambler, but we very seldom remember Lucky Cannon.
Right.
I mean, that should be, like, the way that everyone looks in this business is the gambler got himself over and never won a match on WCW Saturday Night. Lucky Cannon was winning every match on NXT, and no one remembers him. So
yeah.
Well, Brooklyn Brawler, you know, like guys. Like,
oh yeah,
like,
I mean, there's so many
Barry
jobbers, man. George Sal, the Mulkey.
Yeah. You know, it's just you know, like I just think that people just aren't given that opportunity to really develop a character before they're put into shitty situations like that, you know?
Right.
Where, you know, like, they get fed this, you know, this, you know, I mean, like, I'm really hoping that the landscape is changing because, I mean, like, WWE seems like they're developing a lot more talent that, you know, have had presence on the independent scene and have, you know, got to work around. So, I mean, like, I think those guys are the ones that are going to catch people's eyes. I swear to God, this was a conversation I had going back to TNA. Glenn Gilberti was an agent for a while, right? And I had just came from Ring of Honor, and so, like, he just had this thing with me. You know, he hated Ring of Honor.
I bet he did.
Right? And so, like, I walked in one day, and he's, like, reading the Observer, and he goes, you know what? He goes, me and Honky Tonk Man can have a more entertaining match than Bryan Danielson and anybody else. I said, I disagree with you, Gwen. I think that you are just having some assumptions about what Bryan can do, you know, and, like, he's actually a really entertaining guy, you know what I mean? Like, I just think that was one of these misconceptions, you know what I mean? And, like, and I really wish I had his phone number, like, the night that Bryan won the title, and I could be like, hey, fuck you, Gwen. You know what I mean? And just because, you know, like, it was just one of those things where, like, and he gave me shit about it all the time, you know? I remember that night he goes, you know what? I've got your match tonight, and I'm giving you bad remarks in my agent report. And I was like, okay, because I disagree with you, okay, whatever. You know, but I meant, like, you know, to say it, you know, like, and I think the other person he was saying that about was Punk, too, you know, and just... You know, I was just like, man, like, you don't even know, you know what I mean? Like, you only know what you've read or, you know what I mean? And, like, you know, I don't know. It was a crazy thing.
Jimmy, you worked with Christy Hemme quite a bit while you were in TNA. What did you think of her being added to the creative team?
Oh, really, she has, like, really creative ideas. I mean, like, so, you know, some of the stuff that she it was one of those things where, like, I'm not a huge fan on women's wrestling. And so, like, walking in there, like, was really difficult, like, you know, just knowing, like, how she got into the business and all that stuff, you know what I mean? So, like, I was already kind of soured on her anyway, you know what I mean? But, like, she and Gail Kim and Tracy Brooks would come and work out with me, AJ, and Daniels and Kazarian and Joe before the shows. And, like, it made me have a lot of respect for her, you know. And I realized that she just wasn't one of the, you know, the girls that was just there to, you know, get on TV for a minute and then take off, you know. And she's really stuck it out there. And so I think... just knowing her, and I mean, one of the things my house show rate, what I was getting paid per house show was a little bit less than what Lance was getting paid, and so I would sometimes just be on the house shows by myself, or it would just be me and Christy, right? And so, like, I remember we did this house show loop with Petey and me in the main event or in the opening match, and Christy just had the most amazing ideas, really, for, like, spots for her and Petey in the match. Like, at one point, she, like, ran in, and he double-legged her and put her in the sharpshooter and stuff like that, and it was just, like, really fun stuff, and, like, I was just really impressed. I was like, man, she's paying attention, you know what I mean? And so, like, it can't get any worse, right?
Yeah, I mean, the thing that comes across to me about Christy Hemme is that she loves pro wrestling. She's not using pro wrestling as a vehicle to get somewhere else. She loves pro wrestling.
I didn't know that. Yeah, so I take back what I said about her. I apologize, Christy.
Gail Kim was the same way, man. Like when I walked in, I was just like, oh, man. Yeah. My favorite story is, like, the pay-per-view that I debuted at in 2007. I'm about ready to go and make my entrance or whatever, and she comes up to me, she's like, it's gonna be okay, you're fine. And I'm just, like, staring at her, like, blankly, like, what the fuck, are you ribbing me or something, you know? Like, and Tracy Brooks was there right next to her, and she was like, man, he's done a lot of these, you know that, right? And Kill was like, no, I didn't know that, you know. And then, like, ever since then, like, I just messed with her all the time. But one of my first matches happened to be me and Christy versus her and Eric Young. And this was right after TNA was like, you know, guys can't beat up on girls or whatever. And so, but Gail really wanted to,
hit a, you know, like a, she wanted to jump off the top rope and give somebody a Hurricane Rana, like while I was standing in the ring, right? And, I remember the agents were like, no fucking way. He's going to drop on her head, you know, blah, 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 you know, and all this. And I had just gotten back from Dragon Gate where I was, you know, catching Dragon Kid, you know, every night doing that, you know? And I was just, you know, and like, I didn't, you know, I was a new guy, so I didn't argue with anybody. I was like, hey, man, like, I don't have to take, you know, the Rana, like, fine, whatever, you know? And then Alex Shelley, like, you know, showed him, like, a YouTube clip of, you know, me, you know, taking a snap Rana from Dragon Kid, and they're like, all right, we'll let him do it or whatever. And, like, I was so scared to do it. Like, when she dove off on me, I whipped her so hard through that I almost put her back on her feet, you know? But, like, that was one of my proudest moments there is because I didn't kill her, you know, golden child. Yeah, so... But I mean, like, you know, the girl, you know, the girls that, you know, genuinely love pro wrestling, like, you know, like Kong was always awesome, you know, and like, you know, it, shit, man, if it wasn't for Gail Kim and Kong, like, you know, that 2007, 2008 would have been, you know, a flat error, you know, but I mean, I think that angle was booked so well that, I mean, the viewership was always up when they worked each other.
Yeah.
Well, we've had you for quite a while, me, and I'm sure you've got other things to do. So
that's what my wife says, too. My wife says the same thing.
Instead of that's what she said joke?
Yeah.
Anyway, so, yeah, you're doing AWE on Sunday. Do you have any other local shows coming up in the next couple of weeks you want to mention?
Yeah, I'll be at Pro South in Piedmont, Alabama this Friday. I think it's 8 p.m. Central Time or whatever it is. And then I'm back at Peace State Wrestling Alliance. You can go to peacestatewrestlingalliance.com June the 28th. But then, you know, this Sunday, College Park, what's that?
All right. And is there any place you want to mention where people can get in touch with you on social media or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, if you search Jimmy Rave on Facebook, you know, somebody just got pissed off because I couldn't add any more friends. I'm like, fuck off, you know, like, whatever. But, so, yeah, you can go on Facebook and find me that way. But I'm more active on Twitter. It's at the Jimmy Rave.
All right.
Don't ask me anything stupid if you contact me. If you ask me something stupid, I won't respond.
Well, Josh, Larry, do you guys have anything else for Jimmy Ray before we let him go?
I'm good tonight.
One last one, and you've touched on this a number of times in talking about the Georgia scene, but if you had to pick one diamond in the rough of young talents in Georgia, who would that be?
Now, like, you know, if you had asked me this like 2 years ago, I would have said Kyle, but I think everybody already knows Kyle Matthews is, you know, the real deal. I'm still, you know, dead set on Fred Yehi. I think he's the one that, you know, like, man, like, if people just really started paying attention and really, giving him an opportunity to do his thing, then, like, I think he would be the one that, like, blew up out of, you know, a lot of the guys here. But I mean, like, right now, like, it's a fertile ground of talent. I mean, like, there's a lot of talent right here at this, you know, time. But I mean, like, you know, pro wrestling is a hustle too, you know. I mean, like, so, you know, it's all about, you know, getting out there and getting exposure for yourself and continue to learn and grow and develop. And, you know, I feel like, I mean, like, you know, years ago, I said Jason Cross, you know what I mean? But, you know, like, that you know, that stuff kind of fizzles out, you know, like, when some of those, you know, X factors come into play. And so, you know, it's a really interesting time in pro wrestling, and I think there's, you know, a lot of, you know, talent here that can be developed. And so, I think there's a, you know, there's a diamond mine. It's just people have to know how to excavate it.
All right. Well, we appreciate you calling in, and looking forward to seeing what happens this Sunday at AWE. I guess we're done. So thanks for calling in, and
thank you guys. For such a long I appreciate time. It, bud. No worries. Everybody, come out cause pause this Sunday,
please.
Please. All right, take it easy, guys. You have a good night.
All right, you too. All right, Larry, any other shows of note coming up this weekend?
Well, I'll probably, all things being equal, be at the debut of Southeastern Championship Wrestling in Knoxville. I'm kind of a mark to see what Paul Adams pulls out of his hat after being away for so long. So that's my plan.
That's
we'll
on
be saving
Saturday?
Your trip, Larry. Yeah, there's Saturday, right? I believe there's Saturday.
Larry, is it Saturday?
I'm sorry. Yes, I didn't catch that. Yes, it's Saturday.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm looking at gwhnewsandnotes.blogspot.com at upcoming events. There's not a whole lot more this weekend. APW's in Royston on Friday. Diamond Pros in Lyons, Georgia on Saturday. Empire's in Rossville also on Saturday. Passion of Wrestling in Dublin on Saturday. UIW in Franklin. And we should mention again, Ring of Honor's Best in the World is in Nashville, which is about 4 hours from Atlanta. So depending on where you are in Georgia, that might be worth checking out as their first actual pay-per-view.
That's not worth checking out.
Well,
but before we go, I got to ask Larry a question. Larry, what do you think of Billy Buck getting the Anarchy title?
You know, that's a really good question. I would like to have seen how it was done, but off the top, when I saw it, I liked it. I liked it. But I guess it depends where how they handle it from here.
Right.
Yeah.
I will be the first to admit that I know he had that great angle with Bobby Moore, but I really not watched a lot of Billy Buck, so I really don't have a 100% opinion on it. I thought it was an interesting move. I think it's definitely a step up from – you know, what they had done with the title, but it, like you said, it's going to be interesting, and I don't know. That title used to have so much prestige, and I think they're kind of hot potatoing it a lot lately.
Well, yeah, I mean, I didn't like it going to Posey, but, I mean, I don't know what all the – since I haven't been up there in a while, I don't know what all the backstory is, like why Judas
right, exactly.
really isn't around. And but the one thing you can say for Buck is that he's so, so over there, and – as he's gotten more over, he's also improved his game. So,
right.
you know, I like it from that standpoint.
That's really all that matters is that he can get people in the building. They need all the help they can get to keep getting people in that building.
Well, perhaps we can get him to call in sometime soon.
Yeah, I'd like that.
Well, next week, we've got someone from Micro Championship Wrestling. They're going to be back in Georgia doing shows in Valdosta and in Marietta on the 26th and 28th, respectively. So,
uh-huh.
So we're going to have someone pretty much kind of up to us. We could probably have – they usually only have like six workers at a show, so we could have more than one guest. But I guess we'll just – anybody in particular you'd want to talk to, Josh?
Not really. I don't know much about midget championship wrestling or micro championship wrestling or whatever it's called. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to be offensive. I honestly don't know what it's called. So,
well, they
just
do
make sure that just make
midget.
Sure that Nemesis doesn't call in on that show.
Oh God.
Actually, I might see if he will. Just nah. It didn't go well the last time.
Not at all.
Well, before we leave, I want to thank everybody that sent me messages and condolences. It was very heartfelt, and thank you guys for thinking about me because I know I'm not the nicest person in the wrestling business. So it meant a lot to me, and thank you guys all, and thank you, Jonathan, and Larry for kind of holding this interview down for me because not that I'm ill-prepared. I felt a little weird just kind of talking about my own show.
Well, that makes sense. But yeah, hope everything goes well for you and
yeah.
And sorry to hear about what happened. But you got a big show coming up, so you have
yes.
other things to think about.
we will be in grind mode. Well, we've been in grind mode for about 8 weeks now, but we'll be in super grind mode starting Wednesday. So
I just noticed
we have a caller. Haven't seen all our advertisements, you'll be seeing them flooding your Facebook timeline. You'll be hearing all about this show for the next 5 days, that's for sure.
Well, I just noticed we have someone who wants to come on the line. It's looks like it's Skype or something. You're on Georgia Wrestling Now. Who's this?
I may have witnessed the best wrestling match I've seen in over 20 years of following the sport just yesterday.
Oh, God. Was it at Championship Wrestling of Hollywood?
Trent Beretta and AJ Styles tore the motherfucking house down.
Really?
Oh, I have a mark for both, so send me the video.
It was their first time special guest referee making his in-ring return, Nigel McGuinness.
Wow.
It was pretty hot, to say the least.
Wow. I definitely want to check that one out. Where was it? Was it at Championship Wrestling?
It was, yep,
just
across the street from the ocean in Port Hueneme. So that's unfortunately the only match that will not be airing on television. So good luck seeing it. Actually, we may run it in a best of or something down the line.
You told Dave Marquez to figure out how to do video on demand on YouTube, make that thing $2.99, and you have at least one buy right here.
Think of the video archive he's got. I mean, he's tons of footage from years and years of all this stuff that he's done. But I don't know. I'm not too over with that guy. It may have been my last appearance at CWF Hollywood.
Uh-oh.
We'll find out in weeks to come. That's a little tease for you guys. But, Larry, I just called in to say, unfortunately, I will not be with you. Paul Adams is cheaper than Rich Tate and can't afford to bring me over for the Knoxville live event this weekend. And like I said, I hadn't done any favors for David Marquez, so it doesn't sound like I'll be making the trip for the production spot at ROH on Sunday either. So, no road trip for Dan Masters this weekend, but that's fine. Like I told a few folks yesterday, I'll enjoy my Sundays the same place I do every other day of the week on the patio here at the ocean.
Must be nice.
You know what? After 20 years, I was talking to a lot of people yesterday. And I said, damn, I think I first saw professional wrestling at the age of 10. By 12, I was ringside managing or picking up jackets. 13 TV, and at 32 years young, it may be time to finally call it a day. Over 20 years of hitting the road, I think so. As I say that, one of my potentially final weekends in the business, maybe, possibly, July 4th weekend, where I will reunite, is this live? Can we do that over again? Reunite. No, I'm not off the wagon, but it's none of your business if I were Jimmy Rave. With the one and only, Larry Goodman, get the press ready.
I'm ready.
Diane Hughes, I hope you're listening. Quentin Michaels and Dan Masters together again for the first time in a long time in Portland, Oregon, July 4th weekend.
Holy
wow.
Shit.
Talk about fireworks. July 4th weekend in Portland, Oregon for the West Coast Wrestling Connection.
I'm just picturing Dan Masters hanging out with a bunch of characters from Portlandia.
What? Think about this. I don't know if you know the history there. But that's worse than myself and Nigel Sherrod getting involved. I mean, Larry, express a little on that. Quentin Michaels and myself in the same room.
I mean, it's just mind-boggling to think of Quentin Michaels being involved in Portland wrestling in 2014. That's just mind-boggling on its own.
And get this, Quentin Michaels is the power that be that booked me to be there July 4th weekend.
Wow.
Yep. Flights paid for, and a room, and a gift card to Buffalo Wild Wings. So I guess that's what my career has resorted to at this point.
All we need is Diane Hughes in the mix.
It beats a hot dog and a Coke in Fort Valley at the Russell Plex. Hey, Hey, you know what? I was thinking about that Knoxville thing. I know you guys got to wrap it up, but the numbers will go through the roof because of my appearance, so it's all good. I was thinking about that deal, and I sent a few suggestions, and I think that may be why I got X-nayed. I don't know. You want to hear my suggestions for the roster?
Sure.
Oh, I got it. I got
at least a couple. I'll just throw out a few. My number one thought was have myself and the Nature Boy Buddy Landell host television. I thought that would have been awesome.
That would be interesting.
And I, of course, would handle the ring announcing and ringside interviews and maybe pull Marquez in or someone, maybe Michael St. John. I don't know, someone over there, Michael Graham, sit in with us. But I thought that'd be cool. And I suggested Joey Kidman. Paul Adams said, are you on crack? Then my follow-up suggestion was the Southside Trash.
Then you're definitely on crack.
And that's when I realized I wasn't getting flown to Knoxville, Tennessee for Southeastern Championship Wrestling.
But he's got Nick Nitrous.
Hey, is that official? Is that public knowledge? Or
yes, Nick Nitrous is on board. I don't know exactly in what capacity, but he is on board. Yes.
I didn't know they put out a press release or whatnot. But I'm going to tell you that, too. The most fun I've had in the past few years was when I got out of jail a little over a year ago, and I immediately got in the car with Bordell Walker in Savannah, and we made the road trip to Saw, and it had been a while since I'd been there. And unexpectedly, they put me on the TV. I posted the clip the other day on my Facebook, Dan Masters Live on YouTube, Dan Masters Live Facebook, Instagram, Real Dan Masters on Twitter. Got like 100 follows now there, but getting a late start on it. But if you want to follow the real-life best friend of WWE superstar Rob Van Dam, it's at Real Dan Masters.
this guy's such a
and my name was also put over on the PW Insider.
The guy is fucking amazing.
The PW Insider, which might I add, is gets more clicks than GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Put me over in their report yesterday. I always got to give credit to my friends there. But anyway, where was I with that? Nick Nitrous, yeah, he and I, the clip is there, and Saw, I love it. You know, I think David Marquez, he's got his outs and stuff with the NWA. Is Saw part of the NWA? What's the deal there? What's Mike Cersei doing?
Yeah, what is Mike Cersei doing? Basically, Chris Von Quillo and Thorpe told him to take a hike.
Nick Nitrous has a NWA tattoo on one forearm and a SAW tattoo on the other forearm, and when he holds it up, it says NWA Saw. I think he left the company, right?
Yeah,
he did.
I love him. You got to see the clip. It's the most fun, by the way, that I've had in years. It made me feel good, and you know. But when you stop having fun, it may be time to slow down. So that's the whole point of the thing, was to tell you guys that after 20 years, I'm seriously taking into consideration there's too many guys out there working for nothing, and when you work for free, you value yourself as being worth just that. So, Josh, pay your ring announcer, and pay him well. I firmly believe that the ring announcer can make or break an event, and if you got a good one,
I totally agree with you.
So, we'll see what happens. I'll keep you guys abreast of the situation. Speaking of abreast, you won't see any of those at Championship Wrestling from Hollywood. But now we're getting deep into things. So before I lose my West Coast Wrestling Connection booking July 4th in Portland, Oregon, where they've got television, Larry, review one of those TVs if you get a chance for the West Coast Wrestling Connection. Hey, listen. Oh, last thing, very important. On yesterday, behind-the-scenes kind of stuff there at the Hollywood taping, Red Carpet Rumble, by the way, will air on television in a couple of weeks, an entire episode dedicated to the 30-man over-the-top rope battle royal. In that battle royal, WWE, Jake the Snake Roberts. Jake made it into the Rumble. I know the results are out there, but he made it into the Rumble, find out how he was eliminated, and we broke the program wide open with a discussion of who. And maybe someone on the line can answer this. Who created the DDT? Who founded the DDT? Was it Jake Roberts or was it the Grappler?
I mean, Jake claims it was him, but was it the Grappler?
Larry, do you know?
I always thought it was Jake.
You have no knowledge of Lynn Denton being involved in creating the DDT?
I don't.
Oh, when he allegedly tripped Jake the Snake, and that's what caused it.
Okay. Well, there you have it. So those two guys got in the mix. Hey, you know what? There's an interesting development also on Jake not wanting to work with Snakes yesterday. But that all got worked out, too. So they all made it. Matt Hardy was there, I believe, to be sober. Sean Sixpack Waltman. They may have gotten there late, but they performed above and beyond expectation. Stayed late, did the autograph signing. So very professional and cool for both of those guys. It was a lot of fly-ins there. My envelope was light, but I think we already hit on that. I've been known to hold up promoters. You know, a lot of people say promoters hold that. Listen, never take a check. You young guys, never take a check and always agree to an amount before you go to the show. Never just say, oh, well, pay me what you can, because chances are what you feel you deserve and what's in their budget isn't going to add up. I remember there was a show once. I wish I could remember the guy's name. He ran. It was somewhere near Atlanta. I rode with Fordell. Actually, I was booked for it. I don't know. I think Murder was there, but Wrestling 2 showed up. Anyway, I think I'm the only ring announcer to get fired from a promotion at intermission. And they had the police officers. I don't know. God, I wish I could remember the guy's name, but he owed a lot of people money. He wrote checks that night, and I told him I wouldn't take a check. So before I went out to ring announce the next match, he had to send his wife to the ATM to get some cash. And he paid me before I went back out. But then one of the guys in the locker room, it may have been Micah Taylor, you know, I don't really know, but someone told him that I was causing trouble in the locker room. Anyway, the guy sends the police over, and he says, hey, you got to leave the arena. I said, what are you talking about? I'm the ring announcer. He said, you're fired. It was the craziest thing. I don't think that's happened to anyone else. So if I do take my powder, I'm going to definitely have someone write my book. And similar to Tammy Snitch, or maybe not, so mine will actually get produced instead of just sitting around waiting. Tammy Cinch development, Larry. Did you guys say we got another hour here? Am I the future interview? God knows, you need to at least headline with me because people forgot about forget it. But the reality show of Tammy, Sonny Cinch, and myself living in a studio apartment, and then Gorgeous George of WCW fame decides to move in with us. Camera streaming, I think it'd be a hell of a monthly subscription-based service. And it wasn't my idea. It was hers. So
you know, when you talk about your distinctions, you're also, I think, the only ring announcer ever to be arrested in the back of Dusty Rhodes' car.
A pickup truck, yes. Is F-350, I do believe. Sitting in the back, a few beverages, waiting on the matches to end, and handcuffed and hauled in and sat in jail for probably 12 hours or so. But who hadn't gone to jail at least once in their life?
Wow.
I bet I'm the only guy listening to this program that's got warrants for his arrest in Alabama and Georgia. And they wonder why I won't go to Knoxville, Tennessee this weekend. Too close, man. Too close. They're not extradited. I'm good out here.
Wow.
All right.
Somebody send me Diane Hughes' phone number. I want to text her pictures of Quentin Michaels and I. Not those kind of pictures. Hey, I did
no,
hear there were a lot of pictures.
No, not those pictures.
Listen, I'm not posing like a teapot, all right? I've done more in my career than we're not going to get that. Man, I hope I've still got that booking July 4th.
I just said, there goes your booking, man. It's gone now.
I'm going to tell you something. I'm like you, Larry. I'm amazed the guy got a job in this 2014. But that's all clear water under the bridge, you know. You can make more money with the people you dislike than the ones you do in this world. I learned that a long time ago. I hadn't made any money with Larry Goodman.
You never will.
Bordell and I are still trying to figure out why you buried us for so long. Time for a little drink to that, Jimmy Rave, wherever you went.
Anything right,
wow.
I think that's a good...
yesterday. We had all those guys there yesterday, you know, and we normally, our TV tapings are their TV tapings. are free of charge. And yesterday the tickets were $30 and $50. I thought for sure it'd be disastrous. But there had to be 300 people there. Then the and the ones we normally have covered up were all full, so it was strong. And then you think, damn, shouldn't the envelopes reflect $30 and $50 ticket sales? Even if everyone paid $30, let's just say no one bought a $50 ticket. $30 tickets and 300 seats.
9,000.
Man. Hmm.
That covers three guys.
Yeah, I guess so.
And I won't mention which three guys it covered, but.
Well, I know AJ. You know, I think it was funny. Jake Roberts, he's standing back there. He opens his envelope. He's counting it in front of everybody. I'm like, way to make all the shitheads here feel more like scum.
And sadly, he was probably not even one of the top five paid guys in that show.
For sure. Well, I mean, I don't know for sure. I'm not involved in that side of things. I have to ask Michael when we get to Portland. No one's got any questions for Dan Masters as I make my exit from the as I clear out of this.
I'm still in shock that you're retiring, Dan. This might be one of the strangest things I've heard all weekend, and I've heard
a
lot of strange things.
No one can afford me. That's the problem. I haven't lost my voice yet. Thank God. Hey, you know, there were Vegas odds, legit. I'm the Tony Chimmel, by the way. When I stopped drinking, I became a terrible ring announcer. So I'm the Tony Chimmel of Championship Wrestling from Hollywood. I fuck up at least one or two intros every taping, right? So yesterday I find out the fans have a bet. There's Vegas odds on how many times Dan will screw up an intro, okay? I find this out. I get the inside Iggy, so I placed a bet yesterday. Didn't flub one intro.
Oh.
Not a one. Not a one.
Oh, this is
what's
the highlight.
What's the value in sticking around? I mean, what's really changed in the last 10 years?
Oh, God. Nothing really.
I mean, what's the value of doing? I don't know what. I'd like to work with the Southside Trash again, but a couple of times at least, or once, but. I don't know what else. What else is there to do? What could I do that I haven't done already? Think about it.
Well, you could get hired by WWE.
Well, I've already ring announced for the WWE. I ring announced at Access for SummerSlam last year, and I'll do it again this year if they ask me to. So I've already done that. I sat in that Deep South building with Bill DeMott more times than I care to even think about.
Yeah,
Nigel was good.
I
love Nigel. What's Nigel doing? Where's Nigel?
Is he working for TNA?
I used to say, I'm not going to hang it up till Nigel hangs it up. And I wasn't talking about wrestling matches. So. I wish Nigel would move in with Sonny and Gorgeous George and I in a one studio, not even a one bedroom, just a studio apartment with these cameras rolling. That'd be interesting.
That would be interesting.
What's Ben Masters doing? Is he dead yet?
Oh, God.
I'd like to say I won't retire until he's dead, but I don't know. I don't know what else to do. If you guys give me a suggestion or something else, I've done the WWE thing. Next.
Hmm.
What else is there?
Japan.
There's not much left.
What's that?
Japan. Can you speak Japanese?
Japan. That would be something interesting. I mean, I don't speak Japanese, but I don't know. I guess that'd be nice to visit. But as far as career moves, I don't think there's much I hadn't done or wouldn't do.
Is there not any legend that you'd want to work with that you haven't worked with already? Isn't there somebody?
There is. There is. There's one person that I said I would legit just say be comfortable with never doing it again. And I've had opportunity, missed opportunity on my part. It was probably too fucked up at the time, but Ric Flair, that would be the guy. I used to tell Dusty Rhodes, even in his truck riding from Cleveland, Tennessee, or somewhere, we were in Tennessee for TCW, I said, you know, Dream, my favorite wrestler is Ric Flair. Put me out on the side of the interstate one night, made me walk like a mile. But that would be the guy, Ric Flair, even to this day. Hey, I was over in Marina Del Rey. We were talking about getting David McClain on Steve Austin's podcast. And I'd like to actually do something. I know he's not going to have another match, but do something with Steve. I like Steve a lot. It's funny, he's a legend now. I would have never considered him a legend, but he's a legend. Hell, I'm a legend.
You're a legend.
Anyone going to FanFest in Charlotte, North Carolina, NWALegends.com. They got the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes, coming down. The man that loves to hate me. We'll find out what kind of mood he's in Charlotte this year for FanFest.
Now, I'm going to keep my record intact of never attending one of them. So
yeah, you know what? There's a lot of there's people that love GP and there's people that don't. So it's kind of like me. FanFest is loaded up, though. I don't know who the feature guest is, but there's always something cool happening there. I like to go to FanFest and just hang out. Last time I worked, but I'd like to just go and hang out. I'm off the wagon, so I'm going to have a few beers with Terry Funk and whoever else is around the bar.
Wow.
All right. Well, we are legitimately out of time at this point.
Who the fuck are you to tell me we're out of time? Who is that? That's not Josh Wheeler and Larry Goodman.
That wasn't me. That was Jonathan.
Who? Who?
Well, it's Jonathan Williams. Hey, well, I get what you're saying.
Never
now.
Heard of him. Never heard of him.
Well, on that note, I have to go, guys, so I will definitely listen to the archive because this is classic stuff.
Well, hey, what did you want me to say? I'll just say it on here.
Oh, I just need to say, be there in Dan Masters' voice.
Like announcer voice going?
Yeah, like the old, God, who's the guy that did it for Georgia Championship Wrestling? But anyway, you know what I'm talking about. Just
Freddie
Miller. Yeah, Freddie Miller. The old
windy.
Freddie Miller be there. But
maybe too
Dan
windy.
Masters'
I'll have to,
voice.
I'll have to get you on that later. It's too windy out. Hi, Larry Goodman, Josh Wheeler. Thanks. It's been an honor, privilege, pleasure, plum-pleasing pleasure being on your show as the featured guest today. Thank you, guys. You mean a lot to me. Rich Tate, we know about those teapot pictures, don't we? Who took those teapot pictures? Did Chip Day take one? Who took the teapot pictures?
Oh, no.
Somebody research that. I always wanted Doc Gayton to take a teapot picture. Not for me, for Nigel. They hang out with Little Dicky in Nashville, the legend. You guys wonder, hell, I'm never coming back to Georgia. They'll be waiting at the line to shoot me down.
Oh, my goodness.
Who took the teapot picture? Chip Day, Little Dicky, Doc Gayton, and Nigel Sherrod took the teapot pictures, right?
I don't know.
Nigel, or never mind.
Larry is speechless. You hear this? Larry Goodman is speechless. Larry used to write in his reports he was amazed that an unknown assailant and I were sober for the matches. Well, we were never sober. Paul Adams said we were the best on camera he's ever had at any of his productions. Nobody,
wow.
Said, you know what? No one shits on Chase Stevens for being fucked up at the shows. But they always gave us a hard time.
Yeah, well, who is going to give Chase Stevens shit about anything?
That's true.
I guess that. No one says anything about Jason James partying, but they sure gave me hell for years. Explain that.
I can't explain that one.
Can you tell I'm heartbroken? No one can afford me, so I guess I'll retire.
And you heard it here on Georgia Wrestling Now. So
who the fuck is that? Who keeps talking? Interrupting me. Don't talk when I'm talking. All right. Have a good one. God bless you. See you next time.
Thanks, Dan.
I'm out.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com for the latest information on upcoming events and more. As always, we thank you for your continued support.
If you're hurt, get the money you deserve. If you're in pain, get the money you deserve. At Terry and Peterman, we're personal injury attorneys who take a professional, thorough approach to your accident and injury claims. Don't call some long-distance law firm or satellite office. Don't trust your claim to just anyone. For a free consultation, call the law office of Terry and Peterman today, 229-247-0386, or go online at www.terryandpeterman.com. The law offices of Terry and Peterman, making things right.